Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. Andrea, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you today?
Grand, Andrea. You were hoping to go to the Wild Roots Festival this year.
I was indeed. That's correct. Yeah, Katie. Really looking forward to it.
You're a big festival goer.
Yeah. And we went last year and we had a great time. So really looking forward to it. You know, had a great vibe and loved it. So we bought our tickets and we're all set to go.
And who's we?
So my husband and myself, and we bought tickets for my kids as well. Well, they're adults. And last year, four couples went. So my friends and their husbands, their partners as well. So we all had great times. So we said, right, we'll go again. We'll do it. It was all in the diary. We booked the time off, got the tickets.
And were you camping or what was the plan? Because it's up, just to tell people, this is a festival up in Hazelwood, isn't it? Hazelwood in Sligo.
Hazelwood in Sligo, yeah.
And there was weekend tickets available and you could camp. And and what were your plans? Were you going to do the whole camping thing?
Yeah. We were camping. We bought a new tent and everything. We had all the gear in the kitchen and all ready to go. One of my friends, she'd actually booked the glamping on site. So she was going all posh. The rest of us were.
you were slumming it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and a great lineup. I'm looking at like Damien Dempsey and Aslan, Hermitage Green, New Era, The Academic. So we're really, really looking forward to it. And it wasn't just music. There's wellness and lots of other aspects of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, that's what makes it good. Like, you're not necessarily going for the music or the headliners. You know, there's lots of kind of, you know, emerging acts there. And, you know, it's good to go along and see those and get some nice food and a few drinks. And, you know, the vibe, like, you know, last year they had like a wellness centre and they'd hot tubs and everything. It was lovely, like they did yoga, you know. So it's just a lovely vibe. It's a lovely weekend, you know, especially when you get the weather. So.
Okay, and how much were you paying for all of this then? Just remind us.
So we actually got early. We were lucky. We got early bird tickets, so we were well in advance, and so we booked them just before the new year, actually, 31st of December and Christmas time, and we got the early bird tickets for €750. So we booked the four tickets. So it's still a lot of outlay, you know, like, I mean, so you try and save where you can, like, you know, but it's still a lot, like, it's 750 for the four tickets.
Yeah, so. And you weren't even glamping, Andrea.
I know, exactly.
That was the cheaper route. Okay, so All of this was supposed to happen on the June bank holiday weekend.
Yeah, that's
and
correct.
Just a week out, wasn't it, when you got the news?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was on the 22nd of May they announced, so just the week before. But like the thing is, they were advertising up like on the 21st of May, they were advertising, you know, about it and bring a friend for free. And they did a big kind of, you know, push, you know, advertising push the week before. So we were all excited. My friend and myself were sending each other pictures of our camping gear in the kitchen and everything, you know, getting all organized. And then just out of nowhere, they announced that with heavy hearts, they had to cancel the festival. So,
yeah. And I'm looking at the statement they put out here in front of me, Andrea. So, yeah, it opened. It is with a heavy heart that we have to announce the cancellation of Wild Roots 2024. They say, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to proceed with this week's event. And then it goes on to say that they want to thank all the creative, hardworking, dedicated team you know, all the people who stuck with us against all odds over the last 5 years who helped to make Wild Roots happen, because it was going to be the fifth year of the show of Wild Roots. And then this is the line that I really thought was, We want to extend our deepest gratitude to each and every one of you for being part of the Wild Roots family. Your enthusiasm, support and love for the festival means the world to us. And we hope that the memories made over the last 4 years will be forever remembered. And they say then the refund process will start on June 22nd and we will keep you updated.
Yeah.
Have you been updated, Andrea?
Absolutely nothing. Not a thing. My husband got on straight away and he was like, why is the refund process starting on the 22nd of June? Like, why not now? He heard nothing. Then we followed up. He followed up with mails multiple times, multiple messages. We messaged the page and nobody has heard a thing. So we were on, like, you know, on that kind of announcement because nobody had heard anything on that announcement on the Facebook page. And, like, everyone's like, did anybody get any news on the refund? Everyone's the same. So it's been zero correspondence. I don't think anybody has received anything from them. So.
Yeah, well, I wonder if there is anybody out there who has received anything or has been able to talk to the organisers. We've obviously tried to get in touch with the organisers. If they want to come on and tell us what's going on, we would love to hear from them. 51551 if you want to text us, because I know there's a lot of people out there like yourself, Andrea, that are just left there. And you said you're down €550.
750.
Sorry, 750. I beg your pardon. 750 euro.
Yeah. So it's a lot of hard-earned money, you know, like, I mean, to part with in the first place. And then, like, I mean, to get absolutely zero correspondence, you know, and not to get it back kind of straight away. Like, you know, like, I mean, if they knew this was coming, you know, they should have honoured the refund straight away. Like, you know.
I know, but when you see the statement, then it goes, your enthusiasm, support and love for the festival means the world to us.
Yeah. And it seemed so sincere, you know. Mm-hmm. And, like, I mean, we were all like, oh, gosh, something terrible must have happened. They must have got insurance. You know, you have all these things. You know, there must have been a valid excuse, like, for them to cancel all of a sudden like that, you know, because they're advertising the day before. Yeah. Like, none of it made sense, you know. So.
Yeah. OK, will you hang on, Andrea? I've got Ruth on the other line. Ruth, good afternoon.
Hiya, how you doing?
Yeah, you were also hoping to be in Sligo on the June bank holiday weekend, Ruth.
Yeah, it was my first time going. My boyfriend went two times before that and they announced that they're doing Bring a Friend for free. So I thought it was brilliant and we booked our tickets, got our tent and all ordered, and then I got cancelled out of nowhere and I've heard nothing back since.
How much did you pay for your... So you had a buy one, Bring a Friend for free. You know, in retrospect, I suppose we should... That was kind of a bit of an alarm bell in terms of that kind of an offer going out.
Yeah, so it was like €216 for the whole weekend camping. So it was like a really good deal to us.
It would have been a brilliant deal, wouldn't it? With that lineup for that money and a camping thrown in as well. So yourself and your boyfriend, and your boyfriend had been before and really liked it as well, obviously.
Yeah, he'd been the 2 years prior to it. And ever since he went, I've always wanted to go. But since they announced that, I was like, this is the perfect time to be able to go. Mm-hmm. Like, technically, I was going to be able to go for free, but then obviously it didn't happen.
And the email just came out of the blue. Andrea was saying there that she was getting all excited because there was ads for the festival coming up to that week.
Yeah, so I actually didn't even get the email until after I announced it on Instagram, and I got messages from my family saying they cancelled it. And I got confused. And then the email said they will start it on the 22nd. And then it's been about 2 weeks now. I sent many emails and DMs and comments and they're just not answering me at all. So I'm not really sure what's going on.
Has there been any text, anything at all since that initial email arrived?
No, nothing. They're not even answering comments on Instagram either.
Right. And did you know anybody? How much? Tell me again. So you were down 216, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, so not quite as bad as Andrea, but €216 is €216. There's a lot of other things you could be buying with that.
Yeah, because even as well, we were thinking since they cancelled it, we would go to the Sea Sessions Festival in Mindoran with that money. But then obviously they never got back to us or refunded us since then. So we never really got to go to that either.
Yeah, would you be a festival?
Oh yeah, I'm 21, so like this summer I wanted to go to loads, so I did.
Yeah. Because it's the time to do it, obviously. And is it the fact that, because that Andrea was saying that there's so much else going on at those festivals, it's not just the music, there's so many, you know, there's so many options, and there is a bit of comedy and a bit of wellness and all that as well.
Yeah, I even seen that a person commented on Instagram saying they actually bought a stand for about €800 and they're not even getting back to those people either.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the other question, of course. What about all the people, not just people who had bought tickets, but people who were in you know, engaged, were suppliers and whatever. I think we can actually go, can I go to, yes, I think we might be able to find a bit more about that end of it. Actually, Ruth, hang on there for us, will you? Megan, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
Yeah, Megan Best, you are of Native Events, so you're event managers, essentially.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so Native Events is my company, and we do sustainability consultancy, creative climate action, event production and equipment hire. So a bit of a 360 for the events industry here in Ireland, yeah.
Okay, so you'd be right across a lot of these festivals.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working in the industry in Ireland and England for nearly 20 years now. I'm showing my age, but yeah, I'd have a fair sight across the industry here, yeah.
Okay, so tell me about your involvement then with Wild Roots.
Yeah, so I mean, I was just actually looking back through my notes on it after you guys were giving me a call earlier on. We started working with Wild Roots in 2021, and they were hoping to run the festival that year, but restrictions didn't allow. We had a production coordinator kind of helping to pull everything together, and then we were doing the same thing with them for 2022. So a production coordinator's role essentially is looking at all of the different infrastructure and equipment that's going to be needed on site, everything from electrics to furniture to power, water, all of those bits and bobs, pulling all of that information together and then liaising with suppliers and contractors as to when they needed to do their installs and what kind of kit would be needed and so on. So that's the production coordination role that we came on board to do with them in 2021 and again in 2022. Yeah,
because it is, I mean, you know, if you think about it for 2 minutes, it's a massive undertaking. Even these, you know, smaller boutique festivals, there's a huge amount of logistics involved in putting one of these together, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, something that I say quite often is it's an exercise in multi-stakeholder engagement, because there's so many different people all the way through, from the health and safety teams to the program, the stages, technical, the site infrastructure, and of course the volunteers and the audience themselves. There's a massive, massive amount of thought and complexity that goes into pulling together these events. You're essentially building a very small town over the course of a month that runs for 3 or 4 nights over a weekend and then taking it all back down again.
Yeah.
It's a fair bit in that.
When you think about it like that, yeah. So you were involved for the last couple of years, and there was an issue after last year's one. Now people, it should be said, people really had lots of good things to say about Wild Roots over the last number of years, and it had a lovely vibe, and people, you know, obviously people were going back again and again, like Ruth's boyfriend and Andrea and her family. But you did come up against an issue last year.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, this is the thing, like, it is a real shame for Sligo that it's not going ahead now, because it was, the guys had put a huge amount of work into the setup of the festival. It looked fantastic. They really, really worked hard to make the site work as well. I mean, it was quite a damp one. And the set and the stage builds that they did were fantastic. They were bringing something really new and fresh to Sligo. So that's worth saying from the outset. And as you can hear from audience members you've spoken to, people really did enjoy it. So from that point of view, it was a great thing that was happening there. But unfortunately, yeah, after the 2022 show, we were left short on the agreed invoice that we had with them. And a number of the different contractors and suppliers that we would have been liaising quite closely with were also left short. And that issue continued right up to the present day, unfortunately.
So there's still an outstanding bill there that hasn't been paid.
That's correct, yeah, since 2022.
And have you been given any indication that it's going to be paid?
We haven't, no. The communications around it kind of basically dropped off after about 6 months after the festival, and we haven't been able to be successful to have any further communications on it, which was tough enough for us, just to be honest about it. You know, we were a small to medium enterprise just starting out ourselves in 21, 22, so it was a sizable enough bill for us to be.
How much, Megan, are we talking about?
14,500 thereabouts.
Oh yeah, that is a sizable bill in anybody's money for sure. And you have gone down the legal route to try and recoup that now, haven't you?
We did indeed, yeah. We appointed a solicitor who sent made multiple efforts at communications, and there was a summary judgment issued there in the last couple of months, but there's still been no recouping on it. So we don't know what's going to happen now that there's the cancellation announcement's gone out as well. So,
yeah. When you heard that cancellation announcement, did your heart sink?
Well, I mean, we have been witnessing independent festivals having a really tough time on this island and in the UK, actually. As I say, we've got a lot of cohorts and working and colleagues in the UK as well. Independent festivals are really struggling since the pandemic, when all of the arts and creative industries really struggled. And then re-emerging from that, we all thought we could continue to do things the way we did but before the pandemic, but that wasn't the case. And it took a couple of years for the ripple effect of that to really take hold.
Yeah.
That and the cost of energy crisis, the cost of diesel, the cost of labour, the cost of living has meant that independent festivals specifically have really, really, really struggled in the last couple of years. And I mean, you've seen there was a number of cancellations and the festival's taking a fallow year this year. And I'd say that's probably the reason for it, is just the spiraling costs. So it's, it is a very complicated and complex thing to do. And a lot of the suppliers have become very nervous now. I mean, I would be speaking with a lot of suppliers who are saying that they're looking to get paid up front before they go onto site for these gigs, which wouldn't have been the norm previously. You know, we would have had a lot of just really strong established working relationships, and that has certainly changed in the last number of years, I reckon.
Yeah, and I presume that would be a huge difficulty for a lot of these smaller festivals, that they would, if they had to pay up front for everything, because they would be waiting for the ticket income to come in to float the whole boat, basically.
And
would you say the whole sector is in a kind of a little mini crisis, or like how worried would you be for the festival sector here, Megan?
Yeah, I think that there is. I would be quite concerned, to be honest. There isn't a fantastic support network really for independent festivals on this island. There is the Association of Independent Festivals and Events, and they do great work, but they're not particularly well resourced. So I think that there is. Yeah, we're going to see more of these kind of smaller shows that are run out of a real passion for, you know, putting gigs together, bringing people together, having that collective gathering and experience. There's going to be, that's going to get tougher and tougher for people, yeah.
How many festivals would we have over the summer in Ireland generally? Because obviously it is kind of contained weather-wise in Ireland and I suppose in the UK as well. Like, how many are we talking about really?
You're not going to believe this, but the figure that I came across most recently was 11,000. Because when you talk about festivals, you're talking about community gatherings, we're talking about arts festivals, we're talking about everything that happens from the very small scale in tiny rural spaces to the large scale of the electric picnic or the ploughing championships. But all in, that figure comes to roughly 11,000, yeah.
Okay, right. You're right. I'm really not going to believe that. That's extraordinary. But again, yeah. You're talking. You're kind of putting a lot into the same pot there. I'm
exactly,
in terms of the music wellness space that we're talking about here for like that Wild Roots was in. Like there would be that many of those, really, were there across the summer?
No, there aren't that many of that kind of size and scale, no, in that independent space. And a lot of the bigger promoters have started doing one-day gigs instead of the camping festivals because, again, they're easier to manage, they're easier to run, they're that little bit cheaper, and people are less inclined to go camping for 3 days in the field, apart from Andrea, of course. It sounds like she was well prepared to go in and spend a weekend in a field. But, yeah, the scene, it seems, is shifting and changing at the moment.
In terms of like where is the greatest pinch point, do you think? Like, is it that the bands are you know, need more money? Is it suppliers need more money? Is it purely the energy costs, or is it that people don't have the money for the tickets anymore?
I'd say it's probably two things. One is that the insurance and health and safety is a huge, huge chunk of any festival budget. Now, obviously, we all want to run our gigs in the most safe ways that we possibly can, but there are quite a lot of stipulations and regulations that need to be followed to a particular note, and that actually ends up costing festivals huge amounts of money they've left to spend on the programme as a result. That and the cost of transport. The cost of transport has easily tripled since pre-COVID. Yeah,
tripled?
Easily, yeah.
And when you transport for suppliers or transport for the acts or what?
Yeah, so transport for supply of infrastructure is probably where they're seeing it the most. You know, like so all of the generators, fencing, lighting, sanitary units, all of those kind of things, they all generally speaking move around the country on articulated trucks. That so literally the cost of diesel has risen so much that that's where the big pinch point would be, I'd say.
God, yeah, it's a real kind of butterfly effect, isn't it? You know, when you hear diesel prices going up, the last thing you think of is that the music festival is going to be at the end of that, you know, the thing that gets hit at the end of that road, literally. So, Megan, are you hopeful still that you're going to get your money back?
We don't know what to expect, to be honest. It would be lovely if we did, obviously. But at this point in time, it's been, over 2 years. So we're not holding out too much hope, but you never know.
Well, it's really interesting, though, to hear. Thanks for that, Megan. And really interesting to hear how that industry works, because, as you say, it is like talk about it takes a village. You literally are building a village. It's an extraordinary operation. And, you know, you really you'd have to be very admiring of people who take on something like that to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the thing. And it is done out of passion, generally speaking. It is done out of something that people want to do to bring people together for a collective experience. And that is something that needs to be embraced, I think, you know, and acknowledged that these festivals and events, they're actually really necessary for societal cohesion, for mental well-being. You know, it's an important thing to be able to gather people together in those large numbers.
Yeah, so. I mean, it makes memories. It's those weekends of when people's in their 20s and 30s, or God, in their 60s and 70s for some people. that you stay with you forever. That's where bonds are formed and. As you say, memories are made. Megan, thank you for that. Andrea and Ruth, will you stay in touch with us and let us know if you get any contact at all or any indication that your refunds are coming down the track?
I will, of course. Miracles might happen.
You never know. We'll stay on it. Thanks for that, Andrea, Ruth, and thanks very much, Megan. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And now to something completely different. Hannah, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon to you, Kelly. How are you?
I'm very well, Hannah. And Hannah, we're talking to you because earlier this week we had one of our callers. We were talking about GA Go, actually, I think was the topic.
Yeah.
But as an aside, we discovered that this caller's father, who was now in his 90s, had won, had broken a record for cycling way back in the day, Joe White, a Kerry man. And it was an extraordinary story and something that they were hugely proud of in the family. And I thought there must be loads of more of these stories in, you know, and trophies and medals around the country that everyone else has forgotten about, except for the families. And it is like the pride of place in the family. You have the best one of these I've ever heard.
Well, it's a very unusual medal for sure. Yeah, that's for sure.
OK, so tell us, it's your dad, your late dad.
Yeah. My dad, Paddy O'Shaughnessy, from Delvin, County Westmeath. Mm-hmm. When he was a young man, in his he probably was about 17 years old. I think it was the late 30s. He was living down in Longford and he was coaching a local team for the Camogie County Championship.
So he was a hurler himself.
He was a hurler, oh yeah, he was a big sportsman. And he was a hurler and he took on the coaching job for these ladies in Mullinocta, I think that's it, yeah. And they were playing a county championship against a neighbouring parish called Columkill. And one of the main ladies, unfortunately, was sick on the day of the final. And obviously, you know, with the rivalry between parishes, mm-hmm. He took it on himself to dress up in the gym and the black stockings and went out and played the match, never opened his mouth, scored 4 goals and 2 points and won the county championship, right? So after the game was over, the teammates, they all kept the secret safe until it was too late for the county board to declare the final null and void. So Mullaghnocca retained the title and Paddy retained his medal.
And nobody questioned this masculine-looking camogie player on the pitch.
He said he had to keep his mouth shut and say nothing. And there was a couple of big ladies on the team. He said they were the other team pulling against him, so he couldn't say nothing. But he kept his mouth shut anyway till after the game. And then they kept the secret for a while until they couldn't, change the score or the outcome of it.
When I saw this, I was thinking, God, but aren't those little camogie skirts? But at that time would have been longer skirts, wouldn't it, to the knee?
Yeah, I think it was a gym slip they were wearing. And probably stockings to the knee, I would imagine.
So that he didn't have to shave his legs or anything in advance.
No, but Dad was a great hurler and also a great handballer. He had his own pub down in Delvin in Westmead. And he used to have all his medals displayed behind the bar with his cups and medals for hurling and handball. But pride of place on this trophy cabinet was his camogie medal.
I am not surprised. He must be the only man in Ireland that has a camogie medal. Certainly a county championship medal.
But people would come into the bar and they always say, "You're the man that won the camogie medal." So he got great mileage out of his camogie medal, so he did.
That's a brilliant story.
He used to run his own handball tournament. He got an award for the longest running handball tournament in Ireland back in the day. 54 years he ran his own handball tournament, and he played handball all over the world with all the top players that were back in the day then as well. So he was a great sport.
Handball was a massive sport. If you go around the country, all those disused handball alleys up and down the country, it was massive back in the day.
He built his own alley back in the day. So we all grew up in the village playing handball. Everybody could play handball back then, you know.
Yeah, we used to play handball as children as well, just off the side of the turf house in our house.
There you go. Memories.
But I wonder, there is still a handball association. It is part of the GAA, of course. It's still there, and they're still playing it at a high level.
They're having a big centenary now in Crow Park in the museum, and they're promoting handball hugely this year because I think it's a centenary of it or something. So we've actually sent up some memorabilia from Dad's handball collection for that exhibition. I think it's coming up next year or this year, whatever. Yeah, so we're very, very much part of the handball family in Ireland. He'd be very well known to people in handball circles. Yeah.
And do you still have the camogie medal?
I still have it, yes, absolutely, yes. I haven't got it up on the wall now, but I have it safe for safekeeping, for sure.
Oh my God, if that happened in our family, I would have that in the downstairs loo for sure, so everybody would see it and talk about it. That is just the best story. Actually, the GAA should be asking for that. There should be a little shrine to that story up in the GAA museum.
He was a great character, so he was, and a great sportsman.
He obviously really enjoyed it. I mean, there was not that many people. This is back in the 30s as well.
In the 30s, I think it was. Yeah, I think he was about 17 or 18 years of age when he took on the gym slip and took the field.
Anna, that is fantastic. And of course, we have no evidence, photographic evidence or video evidence of the time, unfortunately.
No, it's all, all that. He loved telling the story about it. He got great mileage out of it. And he was actually brought up, do you remember, they used to have the programmes on RTE up for the match with Larissa Murphy?
Yes, indeed.
And they had the camogie finals and they brought Paddy in one night and he had his medal in his pocket and they made a great to-do of him above on RTE and the night before the camogie championship one year. He loved it. He absolutely loved it.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. Hannah, thanks so much for that. That is such a great story. And as I say, there's lots of people out there with medals or records or awards from previous generations that have become kind of family heirlooms. I'd love to know more about them. I doubt we'll get as quirky a one as that again, Hannah. Thank you for that.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
Take care. Good luck.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we're still on sports, or on a kind of a sideways look at sports, but on to something completely different, because a bit of a controversy has blown up over the last couple of days, because the GB team, that's the GB team for the Olympics, the Rugby Sevens team, have posed, this is the female Rugby Sevens team, have posed in very revealing lingerie. And the idea is it's for a campaign. It's hashtag stronger, stronger is beautiful. And the idea that it's that's being put forward is that it is to empower young women to believe that you can be strong and athletic and a sportswoman and also be feminine. And now, to be honest, I had never thought that there was an issue about femininity and sportswomen. But we do know there is for sure a problem with young women, with girls hitting their teens and dropping sport. And this has been something that has been noted and researched, and you know, much thought and efforts are going in to try to keep young girls in sport. This is a campaign that was put together by a lingerie company, Bluebella, in the UK, and they've got a whole range of sportswomen. The latest has been these Rugby Seven players. It is a very eye-catching campaign, let's just put it that way, and a lot of newspapers now have picked up on it, and it's all over the internet today. Some big sportswomen like Martina Navratilova have come out, Sharon Davis as well, come out and said, this is all wrong. I want to bring in Alexandra Ryan now. Alexandra, of course, the founder and CEO of Goss.ie. Ali, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, Ali. What is the story with this? Because it is being pitched as a girl power campaign. Mm. But there's something that feels a little off about it. Is there?
Yeah, I feel very devil's advocate about the situation because I see it from both sides. So the first side, what you noted there, is the research, right? So when you look into the campaign before they ran this campaign with the three rugby players, they said 64% of young girls were dropping sports, and a lot of that was due to commentary from their classmates being like, oh, you look like a lad if you're playing rugby, your body is very laddish, those sort of comments. So that's where the idea grew from. And I'm very much of the mindset on one side that, you know, women showing off their bodies shouldn't cause such a backlash. We've seen Ronaldo, you know, showing off his bulge and Calvin Klein, and we haven't seen fury about that. No one has questioned his professionalism as a footballer. David Beckham in the exact same ad.
For I was going to say, we have seen a lot of men's bodies, sportsmen's bodies in particular, over the years.
Yes.
And it's kind of, we just take that for granted. That's what they do.
We celebrate it, we, you know, we idolise them for it. But the one thing we don't do is we don't question their professionalism. And that's what's happening here today. I mean, I even saw, like, last year, you know, some of the Irish rugby team, they had some videos up on TikTok here, the male rugby team, and the lads are all in the ocean and they're splashing around, and people were saying it was a genius PR move. You know, all the lads looked amazing. And totally, that's fine. I think that's great. But to then see a campaign like this and it's immediate fury, it's comments like it's regressive, it's sexist, but arguably it's regressive to once again judge a woman on what she wears. And in my position as a businesswoman, I always think that people judge me, you know, like, I have a law degree, I'm 10 years in business, but people will still comment on me having dresses that maybe has too much cleavage. So I see it from all of that side. But in saying that, on the other side, the problem with this whole post-feminist era we're in at the moment with the likes of OnlyFans and all that sort of thing is, young girls are being told, you know, empower yourself by taking off your clothes. Like, it's a way to be a feminist. But at the same time, we're kind of telling young girls again that commodifying your body is a good thing. Sexualizing your body is a good thing. So I'm on the fence about it, but I think the fury isn't warranted given that so many male sportsmen do this all the time. And if this was three rugby lads in little jocks throwing a rugby ball around, we wouldn't have anything given out on Twitter today.
The idea, though, let's call a spade a spade. This campaign was dreamt up by a lingerie company whose job it is to sell knickers and bras, basically. And they're getting a lot of free publicity because the likes of us are talking about it. But yeah. Is it just the feel of the campaign. The campaign, if anyone hasn't seen it, it's these really stunning women from the Rugby Sevens team wearing very sexy, I see, was the only word you could use for underwear. You know, it's not. We're not talking about kind of vests and shorts here. There are particular, you know, they're very striking pictures, and they have them in various poses on a pitch, playing, you know, with a rugby ball, and it just feels like it's done for not for other women, but for the male gaze.
For men. Yeah, and that's the problem I have with this whole kind of new wave of feminism, where we're kind of being told this is you, it's your body, but at the end of the day, this is, you know, gratuitous for men. As are the pictures of David Beckham and Ronaldo gratuitous for women. You know, that's just the way it is. But, you know, the male gaze, we would hope at this point, is starting to get eradicated. So I can see, you'd hope it's getting eradicated. So you can see why there's anger. I also think maybe the photos aren't that great. You know, like when you compare it to Ronaldo and David Beckham, you know, like it's shot in a professional studio. It's very well lit. It's very professional looking. I think maybe that's part of the issue, is people don't feel the campaign is maybe classy enough or something like that. But it really does go to show the underlying double standards, though, between men and women in these situations. And at the end of the day, I hate to say it, because a lot of people say there's no such thing as bad publicity, but I guarantee you there are some young girls seeing this today being like, oh, maybe it is kind of cool to play rugby. But obviously that in itself is problematic, because we don't want young girls thinking it's cool, you know, to be like this. So that's where the problem is. I think it's a catch-22, because they do want to keep girls there. And unfortunately, there are girls that would find this really exciting and want to pose in lingerie themselves. So that's why it's a bit of a catch-22. But I don't think it's as bad as what people are saying. It's not, you know, a porno movie. They're just around throwing a rugby ball in lingerie that a lot of women would have in their closet. Like one of the girls has a bit of a skirt on her as well. There's a two-piece. Like, they'd be the exact same things you would see at a beach, you know, like bikini-wise. It's very basic. Yes, it's revealing, but, I mean, it's not something that people wouldn't have seen before.
Well, I suppose the problem now is we see everything all the time now, because, we, you know, everything is up for grabs. I just wonder, though, that... I mean, the words that are being used about it by the likes of Navratilova and others is regressive. I know that the Women in Sport campaign, it was their statistics that you cited there and that are cited in the campaign. They say they're very uncomfortable about you know, being associated with the campaign without, you know, they hadn't been asked if they were, you know, if they wanted to be involved in it. I don't know. Is it something you'd see? That there is something about these particular, like the suspenders. There is something. I wonder, is it a generational thing?
I totally get what you're saying. The items in particular are very sexual. I totally get what you're saying. Like, they're not basic knickers and toppy pants and tennies or something like that. And I think that was probably the point for them, though, is they wanted this to be extremely striking. They obviously wanted to catch people's attention. And it's just three people from the team that are on it, so it's not the whole team. That's why Team GB have come out and kind of said, they've kind of slammed it, to be honest. But from my point of view, like, the pictures that are there, I've seen worse on Instagram. You know, like, I see people every day posting things like this. It's totally the norm. And I think that's maybe why they would have tried to do something like this, that young girls see this sort of content all the time. Influencers in bikinis, like young girls doing ads for lingerie companies. It honestly is all over my TikTok and my Instagram. So for that reason, I don't think it's that crazy. But again, when I just think back to Ronaldo and David Beckham, if anyone listening even Googles the images, the way they pose and everything, it's very sexual. It's aggressively sexual, those pictures. And it's just frustrating that there was never fury. There was no statements from the Football Association. There was no issues whatsoever. So I really think it's a problem that this has become such a topic. And it's once again saying, look, you can't wear this and be taken seriously as a professional, or it's the wrong message. It is a little bit worrying to me, because women at the end of the day, like, we should be proud of our bodies as men are, and men are celebrated for it. But I think, to your point, I think it's maybe the way the campaign was done. Maybe they didn't need the suspenders to be in it, but the actual images of them playing sports and, you know, showing that they're feminine and that they're sexy, I understand the point. I just don't think it's been delivered well.
I do, yeah, and I do wonder as well. I do think that younger women in particular, as you say, you know, if you're in the world of Instagram, of you know, the there is, people are much more used to more risky photographs, yeah. more risky. But it's just a different world. Even kids now, like 14, 13-year-olds who are going to discos are wearing, you know, tiny little bra tops and, you know, tiny little skirts, you know, in a way that wouldn't have been the look of, say, 20 years ago.
No, it's changed a lot, and it is quite scary for parents as well. Like, I do understand that. Like, if I had a young daughter who was interested in sports, would I be showing her this campaign? Probably not. It wouldn't be the top of my agenda. But I also don't have a daughter that age right now who could be coming home to me crying, saying she wants to be on the rugby team, and all the boys are saying that she's a man. You know, they're saying she's too laddish. They're saying she's not sexy. You know, they're the sort of things that have been said. And, like, I do think it's so important that we keep young girls in sports. I don't know if this is the way to do it, to be honest. But with the amount of publicity that's been with it, I think it's going to open a lot of conversations with younger girls. This is probably being discussed in schools. Some schools are probably going to slam this in the UK, but it's opening the discussion about, can women be feminine? Are women allowed to wear lingerie and also pick up a ball? I think that's okay. Like, you know, we're not living in the 1800s. So that conversation starting, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think, if anything, it's probably good that it's blown up to this extent, because it's an important conversation, and it's important to compare how men are treated versus women in these sort of campaigns. And there's so many campaigns. Even, like, we look back to the Diet Coke ad, you know, everybody always thought it was very, very funny. It's enjoyable. If we did that in the female version now, I feel like there'd be uproar. So it seems to be very different depending on the gender.
There's no doubt about that. There have been female versions of the Diet Coke ad for, you know, as long as, you know, since God was a child, to be honest. But the idea of all these office girls, this is the one we're talking about, the office girls coming out and the topless Coke drinker being gazed at. Yes, that is very true. It we have lots of double standards and triple standards, I think, around all of this. But I do think the world has changed a bit. Maybe the arrival of OnlyFans to some degree might have been a turning point in many ways in terms of what has become acceptable to put out there and to look like.
Yeah, and that's a very complicated one as well. Like, when OnlyFans first launched, I think there was a lot of conversation around it, and, you know, women who work in the porn industry, it was seen as a savior, you know, much more safe. You're not on a set with men, you're controlling the content. All of that sounded great. But then suddenly you started seeing, like, 17, 18, 19-year-old girls going on there to make money so they can go to college, so they could buy a car. It started to become a very real issue and a problem. And then it felt like such a massive step back in general that, like, right, if a woman's struggling for money, she can always sell her body, per se. So I really did have a problem when OnlyFans got very, very big. I think it's kind of calmed down a little bit, but I work a lot with Women's Aid, and they've done loads of research into it, and it's just so problematic. And it is that issue of, are we telling young girls you need to be sexual? Like, we obviously don't want that to be the key message, but I think we also don't want the message to be hide your bodies and be ashamed of your sexuality. And that's why it's a balancing act. And I don't think any society has got it right yet. And something like this is, I think, an attempt to try and balance it, but it's gone quite wrong, I think, based on the reaction.
I do wonder about that. And obviously, you know, again, and it's all in the same space. It's a different issue, and a much more serious issue, I think, as well. But it is in the same space of the fact that now teenagers are, you know, routinely expected to take explicit pictures of themselves for their boyfriends, you know, even casual hookups. And I mean, and obviously you've done huge work and brilliant work campaigning on the revenge porn side of things, and where that can lead if the wrong person gets these pictures. Yeah. But isn't this all part of that mix, that if you're putting these very, you know, these high profile sportswomen out there in, you know, very revealing bras and suspenders and very, you know, in these poses, that the whole world is very sexualized for young, and they're being put out there specifically aimed at girls, at young teenage girls.
At young girls.
Are we not in a very sad space?
Yeah, it is kind of sketchy when you kind of say it like that. But I suppose the one thing I'd say is with the ad, they're playing sports in it, so they're not like on all fours or anything, you know. There's no rain dripping down on them or anything like that. So I do think their point was trying to actually just show them being normal women doing normal things. Like, we're all wearing underwear underneath our sports outfit, unfortunately. But no, look, I definitely do think there is the two sides, and I feel like it's going to take forever for us to get away from this idea that women's bodies are to be gazed at. And the only thing I would say about the campaign, if anyone has time to look through the pictures, it doesn't massively feel like a male gaze sort of shoot. It's very authentic. It doesn't look like there was any photoshopping or anything like that. You know, you can see their dimples, a little bit of cellulite, like their actual bodies, like they're just playing rugby. You know, it's not highly sexualized in terms of how they're posing or anything like that. They don't have their finger in their mouth or any, like, it's not a porn shoot. And I think some of the reactions have been so over the top, suggesting that the images are pornographic. But I'm looking at one right now, and they're literally in their rugby boots, and they're throwing a rugby ball, and they're running around the pitch. You know, it's not meant to be sexualized. I really think it's meant to show that sexy women and feminine women can also be very strong and very athletic. So I do personally think the hullabaloo has been a little bit over the top.
Okay, hang on, Ali, because I've got Julia on the other line. Julia, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. Yeah. No, I totally disagree with this. The women, they're beautiful women. The underwear is beautiful, but it's been made to appeal to the male gaze. As women, sort of sex objects. The rugby isn't watching women worth watching unless, you know, the women are parading around. You've seen them parading around in their underwear. I was having pictures of, Brian O'Driscoll or Johnny Sexton or any of those posing in their jock straps. I've seen the pictures of Ronaldo and a thing, but that's a different thing. They're in the Beckham ones where he's in an advert, etc. Those are individual things. This is supposedly to attract, I don't know, to attract girls. Do girls have to? I mean, the underwear is not appropriate for playing rugby in, you know.
That's so for sure. I'm pretty sure there's nobody wearing this particular type of underwear under their rugby gear.
The first tackle and it would be in shreds. But I mean, so who is it appealing to? Is it the fact that, you know, unless you're beautiful and look really sexy in your underwear, you can't play rugby?
Yeah, well, I mean,
women come in all shapes and sizes. It's sexualizing something which shouldn't be sexualized. Take the sex out of sport. You know, women all shapes, men all shapes and sizes play games. These women, however beautiful they are, they're there, and it's to attract the male gaze. Is it to attract men? For what purpose? You know, will men only watch? Pay attention to rugby if the women are parading around in, you know, their underwear. I just don't know. I think it's a wrong image to portray to young girls. You're only valuable. You're only important. Your own men will only notice running around in your knickers, basically. It's just wrong. It's a wrong message out to you.
Yeah, Julia, your line is dropping just a tiny bit there, Julia. But we'll try and maybe sort that out if we can, because what you're saying is very interesting. But I'll just go back to you, Ali, with that. Yeah, that idea that your only value is if you're sexy, and attractive to men, and that this is not it's again. I'll go back to the fact that this is a campaign. Openly, directly aimed at like 13-year-old girls. That's who this campaign is allegedly being put together for and aimed at. And this is the role model that those girls are being asked to aspire to.
Yeah, I do think that the ads really are more so geared towards women rather than male gaze. Just from looking through the pictures, I don't know if she's had a chance to look through all of them. I agree that you could not play rugby in the lingerie, so I'm with her. I'm with her on that. And yeah, look, I do agree. I do think that idea is very problematic, that, you know, they're trying to almost recruit girls who want to be sexualized to play rugby. Obviously, that's not what we want. But But I do think the core aim of the campaign was just to get girls to listen up and look at what it was and to be quite striking. And unfortunately, the thing is, I know 13 sounds so young, 14, 15, but these girls have seen these pictures before. Like, I just can't say that to you enough. Like, when I was that age, I never would have seen sort of imagery like this, and it probably would have been quite shocking to me. But this is the norm every single day on every single social media platform. I'm not saying that it's right or it's wrong, but this probably is the way to try to get girls' attention, as in putting something that goes viral. That's probably the only way they're going to see it. If a press release was sent out with the three girls just sitting in their rugby tops being like, we want girls to join, I just don't know the sort of reach that they would have had. So I'm guessing that's why they have done this campaign. I don't think they did this, you know, with the feeling that it wasn't going to blow up. I think even looking at the first couple of images, they probably knew this was going to cause a bit of controversy.
Oh, look,
Ali,
I was saying, this is whoever came up with this is a marketing genius for sure, mm-hmm. because it obviously was going to attract the kind of attention it has attracted from the kind of people that has, like the Martina Navratilova. When you get people like that coming out and making statements about your campaign, and you are Bluebell, I don't know, are they a well-known brand? I hadn't come across them before.
I've never heard of them. But I'm guaranteeing you the clicks on their site are through the roof today. But again, just to say, like, the sort of shots that they are, they're not very sexual. They really are just playing rugby. It just looks very striking because they're in lingerie. But this is lingerie that these girls probably own, shock horror. And I think that's the part that I struggle with, is that there's still a problem with the women even, you know, owning this sort of underwear or, you know, wearing these sort of things. I really think that's their point, is that you can be like that. Instead of just feeling like if you're an athlete, you can't be sexy and you can't be feminine. I think the issue is maybe what you've said a couple of times there, is that this is geared towards quite young girls. It's teens, it's school girls. I think maybe it would be a different conversation if this campaign was for, you know, women in their 20s. I think it's the fact that it's so young is what makes it so shocking. We obviously don't want 13-year-old girls going on Blue Ballot today trying to order a G-string. You know, that's definitely not what we want.
Here's one of our listeners has texted to say, to be sexual and feminine is different for everyone, for every woman. Women with hairy armpits and hairy legs should have been included, and that is also a woman's natural femininity.
Yes, that's a fair point. I mean, I think the women in it actually look very athletic, and I think that's probably why they wanted to shoot the campaign, because to be honest, when I see ads of lingerie, like let's say Victoria's Secret or any of them, you wouldn't normally see athletic bodies, you know, muscly arms. It's not really the norm at all. It would be very different sort of body shapes, very big butts, very tiny waist. That's not what these girls look like. So I think they were probably trying to be quite inclusive and trying to show that you can be sexy even when you're athletic. I think the issue is maybe that it's with team members that are currently active and they're about to go to the Olympics for Paris. They're very much in the middle of a very important conversation. If these were retired Olympians or, you know, retired players, I don't know if we would have had such an issue now. But because they're active, they're in the spotlight. I think that's probably what's troubling people as well.
Okay, and I've got Julia. I think I've got Julia back on again. Here's another one from a listener in Kenya. Sorry, it's just gone off my screen, so I'll come back to that if it comes on again. Julia, what about that?
I think the point remains the same. This is women just being valued for their looks. I mean, I'm sure, you know, and the thing that they have to give them any importance, they have to be able to be wearing this. We know, you know, women wear sexy underwear, that's fine. But the thing about it is, in their professional job, etc., you know, I mean, are we going to do the same thing? You know, we can't listen to the newsreader unless we've seen her underwear, and it's sexy underwear. You know, it's women being valued, being the value being placed on women just based on their body and their body shape. I mean, I'm sure if I was to go through the rugby team, there would be some who wouldn't look quite as well in that type of sexy underwear. They might have, you know, quite stocky legs or sturdy bodies or be a bit thicker around the waist. So it's been selective in who it shows. So the thing is, you know, what is this saying? You know, it's demeaning to women. It's a bad example for young girls and everything else. And it's the whole thing of bringing, you know, sex into sport. Why, you know, they do. It's sexy underwear. They do look beautiful. They look very attractive. You know, they will catch the eye of men. Women will want to look like them. But the whole thing is to get women into sport and get women watching sport. It's too, you know, why do we have to bring things have to be sexually
sexualized,
explicit like that? Explicit is probably too strong a word, but I mean, it's just I just think it's the wrong message, you know. You know, that you can't play sports. You see it in all things, you know, that it's the women. You haven't seen any pictures of, as I say, of Johnny Sexton in his jock strap.
No.
And you probably won't see the, you know, it's just demeaning to women.
Even though, of course, Julia, and I'm going to take a break now, but I'll just put this thought in your head and we'll take a quick break. Clearly, these women are you know, as you say, very successful sportswomen, and you know, nobody forced them to do this. So, you know, that it is their choice, and people would say they are entitled to do
definitely.
That.
Definitely, yeah. I take that point.
Yeah. Okay. Hang on to that thought, Julia, and Ali as well, please. And we'll do more on this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about this campaign where some members of the GB team, Rugby 7 team, have posed in underwear in a very striking campaign, which there is, they say, is to encourage younger women to be body positive and to understand that you can play sports and still be feminine. Can I bring in Elaine now, please? Elaine, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you used to be a PE teacher, Elaine.
I was, yeah. And worked with boys and girls all through the years. And I can see a huge change in the uptake of girls in sport in the last 10 years, thanks to a lot of role models in Ireland, a lot of what the Sport Ireland is doing. And I think that generally feminism is getting confused. And I think that it's working too hard to be the same as men rather than being equal. And I think that this ad is really just enforcing that. It is pushing this message that we want to be the same. We can do anything that the men can do. And sometimes we can't. But it is trying to be equal rather than trying to be the same is the message I would like to get across. So the ad is fine. It will hit so many different targets. The aims are so different. But I don't like it for that reason. I think we have wonderful role models in you know, if you want to play sport, you play sport, and we have fantastic role models in Ireland. So, yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it, really. I think it's forcing the issue.
But go back to your experience of you know, young girls and young boys and their attitude to sport, particularly once they hit their teens. You're saying we are actually, it is actually working, you know, because there has been a lot of campaigns. And, you know, Jackie Hurley here in RT has done a lot of campaigning along for this as well. You're saying it is having a big impact.
I really think it is. I think that the success of our female athletes in Ireland, let's keep it to Ireland, is wonderful, and they're really fantastic role models. And I can see it seeping down into the schools, that girls are much more likely now to play. For example, I have to hand it to the GAA. They're fantastic. Hockey Ireland, fantastic. And there are an awful lot of girls now staying in sport and seeing the benefits of it. It's been slow, but I definitely see a difference.
I'm just thinking that the athletics that we've just been watching over the last few weeks, I would say have done more than a million of these ad campaigns to get young
absolutely.
Women engaged and wanting to stay
absolutely.
With sport.
And fantastic young women, you know, that nobody really knows, like Laura Cadden from Sligo, fantastic. And she will bring on so many young girls from Sligo without even knowing it and without even trying, because she loves to play. So I think, you know, rather than forcing the issue, which this ad is doing, I think we're doing things well in other areas.
Do you think, I mean, it's one thing to say it's not going to do what they say it's going to do, or it's not going to hit the mark. But would you go so far as to say what Martina Navratilova and people are saying, that it's actually doing harm, it's regressive, it's putting out completely the wrong message to young women?
Yeah, I don't like to be too vociferous about it, and I really like Martina Navratilova, and I would like to say that, but I'm just trying not to, you know, looking at it in another way. But I think it's not great.
Yeah, there's there's a bang of something off it that I'm not, that it's yeah. kind of hard to put words on. But again, I'm looking at this with my middle-aged eyes. And, you know, from a cultural position, maybe I'm not seeing what a young woman would see.
But I don't know why you have to be modelling in underwear when sportswear is so body defining most of the time. And you can see the beautiful athletic female bodies that are participating in the sport without having to go down to the underwear, in my opinion. And I am middle-aged as well, so maybe there's a pair of us in it.
Yeah, you see, it's why we have to go back to Ali. Ali, I'll just ask you that because I've got somebody else I want to go to in a minute. But just that, going back to that idea that it is maybe, as I say, my middle-aged eyes that are seeing something that maybe a younger woman isn't seeing.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if you've seen that Kim Kardashian's underwear company, Skims, they've been working with a lot of ambassadors and they're very reactive to what's going on. So like Sabrina Carpenter, she's pretty much the number one pop star in the world right now. She just signed up, did a campaign in underwear. And our very own Nicola Coughlan has obviously for months now been talking about her body. You know, she's naked in the new seasons of Bridgerton. She just signed up for Skims. So I think what we might be missing here slightly is instead of the part of we're trying to recruit young girls, it's that they're trying to get the attention of young girls. And that's the part that I can understand, because that, unfortunately, is how, you know, brands like Skims are selling out, because they're getting people that are cultural moments and they're putting them in their clothes. I think it's problematic, maybe, what Elaine was saying there, is just the exact sort of underwear suit they were in. Maybe they should have been in shorts and a skimpy string top, but I feel like we'd be having this exact same conversation if a campaign like that went out as well.
I'm not sure. I just there's just something about this particular look, I think, but maybe I'm wrong. Sarah. Elaine.
Sorry, Katie, Elaine here. I just want to say something about our middle-aged eyes. They're very important too, though. You know, so let's not forget that. We're responsible for a lot as well. So we have to keep an eye on everybody.
What do you mean by that? You mean, in terms of we're the mammy generation?
In that keeping, and keeping a balance. You know, we're not to hand over to the next generation, but, you know, we have to lead the way quite often, a lot of the time. And so it's okay for us to say we don't like what we're seeing here, even if the younger generation do like it. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting space we're finding ourselves in, I think. Elaine, I want to bring in Sarah on this point, actually. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, what do you make of this?
I think it's really disappointing. It's very regressive. So I have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old daughter. The 15-year-old has gone off to Malahide Castle to a concert tonight, actually, and look, I spend my time talking to them about this a lot. They're constantly being bombarded with images that their self-worth is completely connected to looking sexual, being sexual, dressing in a sexual way. And it's, you know, it's everywhere. And I kind of hoped that sport would be somewhere, to use a phrase that gets thrown around a lot, a safe space where girls don't have to feel like now I have to perform in a sexually provocative way in order to participate in sport or feel comfortable in sport. And I think it will alienate a lot of girls. You know, a lot of girls who play sport, you know, they don't necessarily go around in clothes like that. So I don't think it has any positives for it. I think instead of going, oh, well, that's how we get young girls' attention, and shrugging our shoulders and going, well, society's so pornified, this is what we have to do, I think we should be getting to the root of the problem and actually trying to talk to young girls. And I know from looking at my girls, the pressure they're under, it's immense. And this just adds to the pressure.
I think you might have hit the nail on the head there in terms of the idea that it's the one place, surely to God, you would have thought you don't need to, as you say, behave or be in a sexualized pose, exactly, or behave in a sexualized way or think at all about it. It's the one place that you can actually just be you. And also, particularly if it's an all girls sport, you're not wondering who's looking at you. And
actually, can I just add there? There's an interesting, I went shopping with the 15-year-old yesterday for the outfit, you know, and
you're trying to walk this line where, you know, you can't say what you really think because you won't get invited to the shop.
Hey, I'm walking that line.
It's a hard line to walk. It is, you know, yep. It's a hard line to walk. But do you know what's lovely about the generation of girls is that, you know, when they're not performing in this way, you know, be it at a concert or walking down the street, they're in their lounge pants and their brother's hoodies and, you know, and so they're looking in their own private space to just be, you know, normal, right? And not have this constant performance on. And so to push that sex kind of imagery into sport, it's just so regressive. And my 13-year-old plays golf, for example. And I asked her, I showed her the picture, I said, what do you think of that? And she's laughing at it, right? You know, they're not even the types of underwear that those girls would be drawn to. You know, they're kind of a bondage-esque as well, which
there
is a whole other conversation.
That's the word. There is a bondage vibe off that underwear.
There's a bondage theme. You know, for 13-year-old girls, you know, I still buy my 13-year-old's underwear in Marks and Spencer's, and, you know, they're for comfort.
And she'll really thank you for telling the country that, Sarah.
Sorry, yeah, no, she'll laugh. But the thing is, who are they appealing to? I agree with the other caller you had on, Julia. This is the male gaze. You know, at the root of so much of what young girls are being subjected to, it's, you know, the pornified culture, it's for male satisfaction, it's for male enjoyment. There is absolutely nothing empowering about putting those athletes in their knickers and taking photos of them. I think it's so regressive.
You touched on that as well, which is this extraordinary situation. If you are, as you say, if you go shopping with a 13-year-old girl, that there is one whole half of the shop, which is these teeny tiny little tops and these tiny, tiny, tiny shorts or tiny, tiny skirts, generally bare midriff now seems to be the look if you're going to a gig now or a disco for that age group. And at the other side of the shop, there's these really lovely roomy lounge, like the White Fox thing that all the kids are after now, these lovely big oversized sweatshirts and lounge wear. And there seems to be like they're like two absolute extremes. And
I think they're craving comfort. I think they're craving an escape. I think, you know, and I think we need to talk to, you know, society's changed so much in the last 15 years for this generation who've never lived before. You know, they don't have the insights of middle-aged women and, you know, of the superficial nature of this. But I think we need to step back and look at the environment that we subject teenage girls. I've got a son as well. He's kind of shielded from it. Like he plays golf and, you know, this imagery isn't being pushed at him and it never has been along that route. We have to figure out why we're doing this and why young women like that caller is supporting this instead of going, well, hang on a second here. You know, we constantly hear, you know, oh, we need to solve the gender imbalance. And I hate that word gender. For me, it's the sex imbalance. You know, the gender imbalance. This reinforces it. This is telling women and girls there is a way to woman, right, as opposed to just live. And I think we're getting it very wrong as a society with these air quotes gender messaging.
Sarah, will you hang on for me? I've got to take my last break. We'll be back after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I want to bring in Paula now. Paula, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Paul, I really want to get your perspective on this now because I believe you have three daughters who play rugby.
I do. And we've been involved for a very long time on the rugby front and they thoroughly enjoy the sport. It is a highly skilled sport. There is a lot of contact in the sport and it teaches them a great many other things about life as well. So we're very proud rugby parents are involved in the club and we support them in all of their efforts and in all of the ancillary and getting them to and from these games all over the country as well. And so I think with regard to the ad campaign, and I must say I haven't actually seen the pictures, but I've gathered from listening to your callers and from listening to yourself what they contain. And I think one of the things that may have been missing or might just be a different perspective is the amount of work that goes into these bodies to make them strong enough for the sport, to make them fit enough for the sport, and for these girls to be sport ready and match ready when they actually hit the turf. And if that's what's being displayed in the adverts, the athleticism, the sport, the fitness, the amount of work that goes into these bodies, and they're putting female clothing on them, for want of a better expression, it may be that we've made it sexualized without needing to do so. I think somebody said earlier that, you know, showing an athletic body and saying that it can also be sexy. I think that being athletic is the new sexy. And I think the amount of growth in the sport and fitness industry, and in particular for certain demographics, for older women get involved in sport for the first time. And the, you know, COVID and the lockdown had a lot to do with that. Women had time on their hands and they were able to do these things, and they've continued. I myself go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. I work out, I swim, I run, and I'm very proud of the work that I've put into my body, but not so that somebody looks at me and says, wow, but that I feel 100% committed to my own health and fitness. And that is something that's going to serve me long into the future.
We're almost out of time, Paula, so I'm going to cut in. I just got one very quickest thing. I mean, obviously, that the strong, athletic, fit, healthy is the way to go. The idea was that you couldn't, that there was a view that you couldn't be strong and athletic and feminine at the same time.
Do you know, I think the perspective is so individual for people. I just come back from America. We were on the beaches. There's every different kind of body out there. I think we are becoming more accepting of people's bodies and of what they look like.
Okay.
And I don't actually think, you know, it's because we're putting this slant on it that we're talking about it.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Paula, we're going to have to come back to it. We're actually way over time here. So I'm sorry I came to you so late. I'd love to hear more from you. And we might do it another day, hopefully. But that's all we have time for today, I'm afraid. On Sound today with James Feeney. Researcher today was Richie Byrne. Our broadcast coordinator was Andrew McDermott. And today's programme was produced by Annette Egan. Stand by now for Ray.